Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
It's the Larry Kudlow Show. Free market prosperity starts here. Now, here's Larry Kudlow.
Hello, folks. This is Larry Kudlow. This is the Larry Kudlow Show. It's great to be with you, as always. By the way, you want to listen to us on the internet and live stream us, it's LarryKudlowShow.com. LarryKudlowShow.com. Everybody can get it around the country, around the world, throughout the solar system, the Milky Way. Everybody can get it on the internet. During the week, please join us on Fox Business Network. Fox Business Network, the name of the show is Kudlow, and it is 4 to 5 p.m. every day, Monday through Friday. And if for some crazy reason you can't get us or can't be there at 4, just text your favorite 9-year-old, and she will show you how to DVR the show. And you'll never miss a show. You'll never miss a thing. All right. Most Americans doubt their children will be better off. Wow. That was the big headline in a major Wall Street Journal article, lead article. I was talking about a poll from the University of Chicago called the NORC poll. Most Americans doubt their children will be better off. And the subheading on that was, dim view of economy underpins pessimism about the future and record low happiness in the U.S. Again, this is sponsored by the Wall Street Journal, but the poll is the University of Chicago. It's a nonpartisan research group. They do this all the time. And, you know, I hate to see this kind of pessimism. I'm an optimist, congenital optimist. I think you know that. I believe in freedom and free markets. I believe in the American idea. But we're suffering recently. I don't think it's the American people, although they are pessimistic. As I've said before, the decline is in the leadership of this country, namely the Biden administration. And I will say to you, with this poll, and there are other polls out this week showing Biden dropping 6, 7, 8 points, that Biden owns this pessimism. He owns this pessimism. And I think one of the big issues here, he owns the inflation that is haunting middle-class working folks, typical average families, suffering still from inflation, which itself came from all these massive spending bills that Biden and the Democrats put together. And it's doing great damage still. Even though the inflation rate has come off a bit, it's still out there. It's the cruelest tax of all. John Maynard Keynes said that. Inflation is the cruelest tax of all. Actually, I'll give you an example of inflationary spending. The president says, you know, he's balancing the budget or cutting the deficit. It's just nonsense. Big Wall Street firm just did a piece called Inflation Reduction Act, the badly named Inflation Reduction Act, the IRA, would cost $1.2 trillion, three times the CBO estimate. It was originally pegged at a little less than $400 billion. And Goldman Sachs has looked at it, and they've come up and said, nope, it's going to be $1.2 trillion. That's over three times the original Congressional Budget Office estimate. Spending on electric vehicles is expected to total $393 billion, 28 times what the experts predicted in Washington. But there's more from the frenzied spending, from the Biden spending. Consumer prices during Mr. Biden's presidency, you're up 14.4%. The February inflation rate we just got ran at nearly triple the rate of the year before the pandemic began. That was 2019. And under Biden, grocery prices up 20%, gasoline up 35%, utility services up 41%, new cars up 19%, used cars up 22%, housing services up 13%. And in this poll from the University of Chicago, nearly two-thirds said inflation is a major concern. Two-thirds. 67%. And then roughly 4 in 10 cited health care and housing costs. I know unemployment is down, but the poll showed a big anxiety about jobs. Almost half said the finances is worse than expected. And here's one that's, you know, really bad. More than half have lost faith in the power of a college education. More than half have lost faith in the power of a college education. I hate to see that. And here's the final one. Just 12% describe themselves as, quote, very happy. And that is the lowest share on record since the University of Chicago began asking the question every few years, starting in 1972. Now, I will just say, I will posit, one of the big, big issues here is the Biden administration has not generated any confidence in its ability to steward economic prosperity, either now or in the future. People want somebody that's going to be the guardian of economic growth and prosperity and future opportunities, and they don't see it. They don't see it in the Bidens. And that's a big problem. And I've said this a lot. His policies have not worked. Big government socialism has not worked. If it would have worked, it would have already worked. And I'd say, I'll add to that, I think Mr. Biden owns the banking problem. He owns the lack of prosperity. He owns the inflation problem. It came under his administration. We didn't have any inflation before. This is new, the last 2 years, and it's a killer. But the inflation problem has spawned the interest rate problem, which has spawned the banking crisis problem and the depositor fears. And we've already seen a couple of regional banks go down. Several more are on the precipice. This is Biden's banking problem because the original sin of the bailouts was skyrocketing inflation, which his Treasury Secretary denied, even though she was the Fed chair. Before that, she was the head of the Council of Economic Advisors. She had great credentials, Janet Yellen. But she was one of the biggest inflation deniers. I mean, Biden was an inflation denier. Yellen was an inflation denier. I remember she finally, in 2022, last year, about a year ago, went on CNN and admitted, oh, my God, there's inflation. There is inflation. It was like a hostage video. Now she's going around. One day she said, we're going to bail out all the bank deposits, including the uninsured. Then the next day she says, no, we won't. Then the day after that, this is just Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. She says, if we need to, we will bail out all the uninsured deposits. It's a $7 trillion price tag. Back and forth. Nobody knows what she's saying, what she really means. And I'll say this, I think typical families, working folks, do not like the bank bailouts. They don't like them because they know they're going to have to pay for it. If you start to cover the uninsured deposits, you're going to do two things, actually. Number one, you're going to create what's called a moral hazard. What does that mean? That means, basically, if the government insures all the deposits, bad banking behavior will get worse because they got Uncle Sam to be their backstop and their safety net. It's the worst imaginable thing. And, of course, the second point, people don't like it because they're going to have to pay for it. and it's going to be very expensive. As I said, you're talking about $7 trillion. $7 trillion with a T, dollars. Who's going to pay for that? You and I are going to pay for that. Along with Biden's flurry of social program benefit spending without any workfare. Well, people don't like this one bit. What you have here, and I think this is nagging, it's not that people are against all government. They're not. I'm not. What they are is they're against unlimited government, massive expansion of government, which is curtailing their freedoms. That's a problem. All these bailouts and subsidies and taxes and regulations and social benefits, you know, and then you got your cancel culture and your diversity and equity inclusion, and your ESG investing and all this and all this. It's all about government and unlimited government and government telling you what to do. Not even a modest nod to free market capitalism. You know, I'm not against renewable energy sources. Heck no. I think we should have as much energy as we can. Expand our energy base. But if you want more renewables, that doesn't mean you have to end oil and gas fossil fuels. Common sense, don't end them. Run them side by side. And by the way, the fossils will become cleaner. They're already the cleanest in the world. But you don't destroy 75% of your energy source in order to save 5 to 10%. I mean, that's crazy. That's what the Bidens have done. We need to grow the energy pie, but most of all, we need to grow the whole economic pie. And most of all, we need to persuade people. We need leaders in both political parties who will be committed to growing the economic pie, to nurturing prosperity that is credible and lasting, to produce faster economic growth, 3.5 to 4% growth, not 1 or 1.5% growth. We used to have 3.5% growth, 50 years, 1947 to the year 2000. 3.5% average annual growth with very little inflation. Let's go back to that, but not with these big government policies, not unlimited government. You have to employ free markets. And that's what the Bidens hate. Just another one. I mean, was it yesterday, the day before? We got to have different air conditioners. Your air conditioner is no good. Your gas-burning stove is no good. Your toilet's no good. Your shower head's no good. Your gasoline-powered car is no good. People don't like that. They like choices, not command and control or central planning. They like choices. And they don't see it. They see an unlimited government, limitless government. Without free markets that have been the backbone of American prosperity for 250-some-odd years. That's why people are pessimistic. That's why these polls are showing pessimism. They're not happy. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is so important. I want happy campers, not unhappy campers. We need a change. We need a big change in the body politic. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back after.
This is the Larry Kudlow Show. Now, back to the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. Away from the economy, you've got this Donald Trump drama here in New York. You know, this guy, I just want to comment on it. We'll talk about it later in the show. My pal Roger Stone's coming on. And another friend of mine, John McLaughlin's got some very interesting polls to share with us. But just for me, I mean, this guy, Alvin Bragg, big left-wing, radical, you know, George Soros guy. This guy can't even indict a ham sandwich. I mean, everybody says any DA can indict a ham sandwich. Alvin Bragg can't even indict a ham sandwich. The name of the ham sandwich is Donald Trump. It's supposed to be indicted. Were arrested last Tuesday. Nothing happened. The key witness There's this guy, Cohen, who was sort of a lawyer for Trump, but not exactly. Anyway, he was, you know, he himself was convicted of perjury, went to jail for 3 years. And he's like the key witness for Alvin Bragg. And it turns out Cohen's story was completely phony. Cohen's former lawyer, Robert Costello, a good lawyer, very good lawyer, Costello testified before the grand jury and destroyed Cohen's testimony and said, Cohen had nothing, Trump had nothing to do. Trump didn't make any payments to this Stormy Daniels. He didn't make any payments. He didn't tell anybody to make a payment. Cohen did this on his own, or so he says. But he told the jury, you know, after he was convicted and served time and the pokey came back out, told this Bragg jury that Trump was involved. He wasn't involved. So all of a sudden, the jury has to go home, right? No jury, no conviction. Now, I don't know what's going to happen next week. Bragg may try to come up some convoluted case, but I think he's lost the jury. He's lost his own jury. All things a farce. Going after Trump is a farce. Treating an ex-president like that is a farce. This is just far-left Trump derangement syndrome. That's all it is. It's always been that way. The far left is petrified that Trump will win the Republican nomination and be the next president. They're petrified. They hate the guy. I mean, it's as clear as day. This is just one of the stupider things the left has done. And we're talking far left here. We're not talking left of center, respectable left of center. We're talking way out there. You know, this is no bail, no jail, Alvin Bragg. That's who he is. Backed up by a bunch of socialists. And here in New York and the city council up in Albany and the legislature. These are crazy people, in my opinion. Crazy people. They have no evidence. I don't know what's going to happen. They're trying to find a witness late last week. They didn't find one. Maybe they will. I mean, and then, of course, Dershowitz, who's a very smart guy, Harvard, you know, retired Harvard professor and great lawyer. I mean, Dershowitz keeps saying you can't indict Trump because the statute of limitations has run out. 2 years for misdemeanor. It's been out. You know, this story is 7 years old. Feds, the Justice Department looked at this. The Federal Election Commission looked at this. There was no campaign finance issues. There's no nothing. Cohen acted on his own. Why? I don't know. I think he was trying to suck up to Trump. So Trump, and by the way, this woman, Stormy Daniels, she writes stuff. I don't know what to believe. TMZ, she writes stuff that there was no affair. I don't know. I don't care. Trump is not running for sainthood. He's running for president. Look, I love Trump. I've said that before. I love the guy. I served 3 years. It was a fabulous experience. Should he be the next president? I don't know that yet. I don't. I'm going to be honest with you. But to see these far left people keep going after him, this is like the Russian hoax to the 100th power. Where did that lead to? Nowheres. Just caused a big ruckus. And we'll ask John McLaughlin, but judging from the polls, I mean, Trump's polls have gone way up before this, but in doing this. Now, you know, I would say to my former boss, pictures of you with a baseball bat is not a good thing. And if you could please stay away. I know he has a temper. To know him is to love him. He has a temper. He's saying things now about potential protests or things of that sort. Don't go there, sir. Don't go there because you're going to win this. They have nothing on you. It's not necessary to go into these protests or any hints of violence. We don't need that. But Bragg has no case. And if he does actually continue to try the case, it's going to be a mockery. And incidentally, Bragg's failure diminishes the significance of some of these other cases, you know, the classified documents. I mean, there's no case there. You want to indict Trump for classified documents? Indict Joe Biden. Indict Mike Pence. Indict almost everybody who ever made a mistake or whatever. And they want to go after Trump for J6? But wait a second. Look at Trump's speech. He clearly called for a peaceful demonstration. Peaceful. And he wanted 20,000 National Guard to guard the Capitol just in case. What's the case there? This is all Russian hoax to the 100th power. People suffering from Trump derangement syndrome. It's really quite remarkable for me to watch this. I wasn't involved in the January 6th stuff. But anyway, we'll see if Alvin Bragg can pull something out of the fire. I think the guy, it's just the goofiest thing you've ever seen. The absolute goofiest thing you've ever seen. And by the way, no one knows politics the way Donald Trump knows politics. So we'll talk about that later in the show. It's a non-economic story. It's an important story. It's kind of a lot of fun anyway. I love to throw in a little politics to these shows. But, you know, Joe Biden's poll numbers are cratering because of the economy, because of the bank bailout, and people have gotten very pessimistic out there. We'll talk more about all this and the stock market and the banking crisis. I'm Kudlow. Stay with us, please.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
This is the Larry Kudlow Show. The power of information. The freedom to talk about it. With New York attitude. Talk Radio 77 WABC. To the White House. This is the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. Great, great pleasure to bring in distinguished Florida Senator Rick Scott, former governor of Florida, one of the authors of the Florida Miracle, I might add. There's a string of good governors down there. Anyway, Senator Scott, welcome to the show.
Larry, it's always great to see you.
You had texted me, what are the couple things to do to help the banking system? And I didn't really respond, but I'm glad you're on the show. We can talk a little bit about that. One of the things that I don't want, I think you'll agree, is I don't want to bail out $7 trillion of deposits, insured and uninsured, because of the issue of what's called moral hazard, where if you know the government is going to backstop your every move, you're going to do stupid, high-risk, dumb things.
Why not?
Right.
No.
So I
why not? If you have no risk, right? And it's just like what Powell did. First off, what he did with the interest rates, kept them down forever. You had no. You should buy everything then. I mean, that's what he's been part of the cause of the inflation. But this idea that they're going to bail out anybody that makes a mistake, it is your job to figure this out. We know that the federal government only guarantees $250,000. And by the way, it's not fair to taxpayers. On top of the fact, the moral hazard. I mean, why does somebody that's doing the right thing have to pay for somebody that goes and does the wrong thing? That's exactly what happens here.
I think that's one of the biggest reasons. You know, we've been watching Biden's polls. Now, polls are just polls, and they're not votes, but they're kind of tracking things. And Biden, since last Sunday, Senator Scott, March 12th, when the decision was made to bail out, actually it was two Sundays ago, to bail out Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank. But since then, Biden's polls have dropped 7 points in overall favorability and economic favorability. In fact, his economic numbers are barely, I think it's about 31. So I think your point, I mean, I don't think voters or taxpayers, they're watching this with horror. They don't want to be on the hook for the kind of taxes that would happen if we bail everybody out.
And by the way, we can't. We don't have enough. We already have $31.5 trillion worth of debt. Right. We are in a debt ceiling crisis right now. If you look at his budget, he's talking about as much as $3 trillion worth of deficits. It's going to be $1.4 trillion this year. So the guy can't live within his means. He will pay for everybody's everything because he thinks he can, because it's your money, I guess. I mean, this is crazy. And by the way, the Federal Reserve, think about this. I think the other thing that's going on is that people are fed up with Jay Powell and Janet Yellen because they just say, now, these are the same people that told me inflation was transitory, and I watched my gas go up and my food go up. So these guys are telling me that, oh, the banking system's safe. Well, what in the living daylights were you guys doing then? All right. So, there's no credibility anymore with Biden or his team. It's not good for the country.
Limitless government. As a former businessman and a former CEO, you know something about this. Yellen, I don't understand. One day she says we will bail him out. Then the next day she says we won't. Then the third day, literally Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday this past week, she says, yes, we will. The Federal Commission meetings called FSOC, God knows what they decide to come up with yesterday. It isn't clear. But, I mean, you're right. I don't think people have any confidence. And I think you're right. People don't have any confidence in Jay Powell either at the Federal Reserve.
No, think about this. 2008 banking crisis. We bailed out everybody and their brother. Okay, was anybody, did you hear of one person at the Federal Reserve held accountable? One person at FDIC held accountable? No. As Jay Powell said, or Janet Yellen said, you know what? We made a mistake here. We should have caught this. And this is what we're going to do differently. Have they said that? Or have they said, we've looked at all the other banks and nobody has this problem? No, they haven't said that. They said, just trust us. You know, just like the inflation thing, just trust us. There's no problem here. So this is wrong. I have a bill that says we're going to get an independent inspector general at the Federal Reserve. I mean, think about this. Federal Reserve doesn't have an independent inspector general. When you run a company, you get independent auditors. They report to the board, not to the CEO. The Congress is the board. We should have independent inspectors. So you know what? If I want to ask a question, I don't have to ask the person that Jay Powell appointed. I can ask somebody independent of Jay Powell that was appointed by the president, confirmed by the Senate, and get better information.
You know,
we got to start having that accountability.
Well, I agree 100%. Jay Powell has said the Fed will investigate, but, you know, an independent IG would probably be a better idea. But the other thing is, out there in California with Silicon Valley Bank and First Republic and some others that are on the edge, you had the San Francisco Fed run by this Mary Daly, who was a Janet Yellen protege. She's a very left-wing. She's a PhD, but she's a left-wing, big climate change, big, you know, diversity person.
Right.
Anyway, they didn't do their job, Senator Scott. That's the problem, I think. And it has come out.
I mean,
the supervisory part of this was never done. The examination, they knew some of the issues, but they never did anything about it. And I think that's kind of a mystery that should be solved.
And Larry, what are these banks sitting on the boards of the regional Federal Reserve that's supposed to regulate the banks? Doesn't that sound a little odd?
Well, they've always had banks on the Fed board. I mean, I grew up in the Federal Reserve. But, well, that might be true. That may be a conflict of interest.
You're going to go regulate your buddy? You know, the person you go out and have dinner with? I don't know. Come on. I mean, that's why we have to have independence. Here we have the independent boards. We have to have – I mean, it's no different than what we did with corporations. We forced them to have independent boards from the CEO. We've got to do the same thing here. We've got to have independence here where so the people that are going to regulate something are not going to dinner with you every night.
You know, it's a good point. Well, I think somebody should look at that, actually. Maybe you want to restructure the Fed. I'm not against that. I'm just saying it's always been the case. But, I mean, I think – when you read reports, and look, information is scarce so far, but when you read reports about this, the bank examiners out there in the San Francisco Fed were aware of the asset and liability mismatch and the, you know, they owned the duration interest problems with the long-term bonds and some of the bad loans, but they never did anything about it, Senator. That's the part that galls me. They knew about it, or at least they knew enough about it, but then you read stuff, they didn't act on it. They didn't force the banks to change, or they didn't throw the CEO out and the board out, which is what they should have done. Now, that there should be solved. You should take the leadership in that. You should go after that. What the hell happened? Why didn't they do this? Yeah. You would have done it in your company.
Yeah, Larry, we're going to get accountability here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going to get an independent inspector general. But look who's going to get hurt. Taxpayers are going to bail out these. They're doing all these. This is going to be a bailout. Taxpayers are going to pay for it. That's one. Mm-hmm. Number two, look at what's happened to our community and regional banks. Money's moving out of them, mm-hmm. which means if you don't know Jamie Dimon, if you don't know one of the big bank CEOs, you're not getting a loan. I mean, what's going to happen is all these banks are going to be smaller. These community and regional banks will be smaller. So now you want to get started. And you know your local banker, but how are you ever going to get to know Jamie Dimon? You're not. Hmm. So it's going to hurt our regional. It's going to hurt our economy. I mean, what they're doing is, but this money is moving out because people don't get comfortable. They're not comfortable that Jay Powell and Janet Yellen are doing their job. They just have the nice words with nothing behind it.
Well, you know what? You are apocryphal. There's a Bloomberg article out today or late yesterday, Senator Scott. U.S. bank deposits decline by most in nearly a year. Deposits fell more than $98 billion, and the decline is entirely due to a slump at smaller U.S. banks. Bank deposits fell $98 billion to $17.5 trillion, blah, blah, blah. Deposits at small banks slumped $120 billion. While those, you'll love this, while those for the 25 largest firms rose by 67. So deposits are migrating from the smaller banks, probably because they figure they won't get bailed out, and they're going to the big banks because they're too big to fail. Now, that's a very weird banking system for a free country like ours.
Well, think about it this way. A kid like me growing up with no money, I had to go to the banks to get a loan. I bought my first business, a donut shop. There was a local bank that knew me well enough to lend me the money. Mm. They won't be there. I'll have to say, hell, how do I get to know Jamie Dimon? Gosh, that's going to be hard. I'll never get the loan. I'll never get started in business. That's what's going to happen. We're going to ruin the community banking system because Jay Powell and Janet Yellen won't do their job.
Mm. When you were governor of Florida, I mean, you oversaw whatever it's called, the Florida Banking Department or whatever the regulators call it. What was that like?
Well, I believed in accountability. Here's what I did. In Florida, I believed in complete transparency. So I said, put the information out so everybody makes a decision. Mm. By the way, shouldn't our depositors know a little bit more about what's going on here?
Mm.
I mean, let's live in transparency.
Mm.
Let's figure out what everybody's doing. So what I did is we held people accountable. Is it fun? No, it's not fun. It's not fun to say, you know, we're going to have to hold you accountable because you didn't do your job. But guess what? You decide not to do your job. The people at the Federal Reserve, they're the ones, starts with Jay Powell. And if Jay Powell's not going to hold anybody accountable, he can't have his job. How can if you're a CEO and says, I just want to be liked by everybody, you will fail.
Mm.
OK, you've got to hold people accountable. And people that didn't do their job, it's no fun. You have to get rid of them, but you got to get rid of them. They made that decision. Hold people accountable.
You know, that's such an important point. I was just thinking while you were saying this. So Powell had his press conference this past week, you know, and the whole world watches, at least the whole financial world.
Right.
And he's up there babbling about we're going to raise rates, we're not going to raise rates, inflation. He never says anything clearly. But what he should have said is what you just said, how he's going to take the bull by the horns and find out immediately, like in 2 weeks, let's say, exactly what went wrong at the San Francisco Fed and, Silicon Valley Bank. I think that's what I'm just going to call them typical families. That's what they want to hear. What the hell went wrong? Because if they're going to they're going to pay for it. So they'd like to know, or why did the big shots and the well-connected get covered and we don't get covered? So what happens here? U.S. deposits declined by most in a year. Almost 100 billion deposits left small banks, went to the big banks. People are not stupid. But that's what Jay Powell should do. You're exactly right. Somebody should say that. You know what? I'm going to say that on my TV show. I'm going to go and rail about it. He should have talked about that. I'm sorry to take your time up, but you're a good friend.
And
you and I think a lot alike.
Problem.
Yes.
You know what? You've got to acknowledge there's a problem, first off. He needs to acknowledge, hey, we screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we would be more comfortable. You're always more comfortable if somebody says, hey, I screwed up and this is what I'm going to do to fix it.
Mm.
You get that.
I do.
No responsibility? None? Come on.
My bad. He could have said that. My bad. But he didn't.
Yeah.
Senator, you got another couple minutes. We got to take a break. I want to talk to you about some other things, some spending discussions and also some politics. Please stay with us. You're so great. Folks, Rick Scott is a friend of mine, so it's a delight to have him on the show. I'm Larry Kudlow. We're going to take a quick commercial break, then come back to get Senator Scott's wisdom.
Hi, it's Lou Dobbs for Priority Gold, America's precious metals dealer. These are volatile times with high inflation, soaring debt, wars on multiple continents, and rising financial stress. Central banks are buying gold to diversify their reserves, so are many Americans. Call Priority Gold and find out how precious metals can help you diversify your portfolio. They're highly rated and happy to help. Call 1-866-303-6357 or get a free gold guide at PriorityGoldGuide.com. That's PriorityGoldGuide.com.
Larry Kudlow. This is the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. We're talking to Senator Rick Scott of Florida. Senator Scott, big story broke yesterday, editorial in the Wall Street Journal today. The real cost of the so-called misnamed Inflation Reduction Act is actually $1.2 trillion. This is so interesting. Goldman Sachs says the uncapped tax credits will cost three times what Democrats claim. That bill was scored. I call it the Joe Manchin bill. That bill was scored as about $400 billion, a little less than $400 billion. Goldman went through it and said you basically have unlimited uncapped tax credits for one thing or another. The things, all things that cost $1.2 trillion. $1.2 trillion, which blows the lid off of any phony deficit reduction that Joe Biden is talking about.
What a joke. I mean, think about it. Just in the first 2 years of Biden, $1.2 trillion for supposedly infrastructure, but it's just a one Green New Deal. Mm. Okay. They got the $155 billion, you know, that has no accountability, but something to do with guns. $280 billion on a CHIPS bill to give people, companies like Intel, $4 billion to build something they already committed to build and never stop doing business in China. Then you got the Inflation Reduction Act, which is 1.2. You got Omnibus 1.7 nobody even reads these things. You don't even, there, you realize that these things don't even get read. They give us these bills at the last second, and it's full of everything under the sun. But Omnibus was three times the size of the Bible, and we voted and passed it. I voted against it. Voted passed it within 48 hours. I mean, you read the Bible, both old and new. I read both of them three times in 2 days, right?
I have read the Bible. Not for long.
I know,
but I read scripture. I read scripture every now and then when I go to church.
You do it in 2 days? Three times?
No.
Just make sure you got it?
No.
I mean, we wonder why we have $31.5 trillion of debt. Mm. We got inflation that's hurting the poorest families. These deficits are just, it's staggering. And by the way, Larry, we don't even do budgets in Congress. Maybe this year in the Republican House we'll do them, but we're not even talking about budgets.
I'm telling you,
this is the craziest thing.
These are big numbers. This bill was going to cost in total a little less than $400 billion. I mean, it was a climate change bill from day one. Had nothing to do with inflation. By the way, it's going to cause more inflation because of the spending. And here's Goldman Sachs, which is a center-left economics department. I know them very well. It's a center-left department. They're saying it's going to cost $1.2 trillion. And Senator Rick Scott, I got another one for you. The center-left Brookings Tax Policy Center. Now, they're not crazy left. They're just center left. That's why I distinguish. Mm-hmm. They priced out the Biden tax increases, which were in the Inflation Reduction Bill. And here, 111 million taxpayers under $400,000 will see
shocking
tax increases in 2024. In other words, Biden said nobody under 400,000. That here's the center left Brookings Tax Policy Center. Right. 111 million taxpayers the majority.
Hey,
here,
what about,
listen to this. Yeah. The majority of taxpayers making between $31,000 and $400,000 would see tax increases this year. That, by the way, just looking at the quintiles, that is 98%. 97.6% will see a tax hike as a result of Biden's bill.
Oh, and Larry, on top of that, remember, we got 87,000 more IRS agents to make sure you don't mess up on any of your taxes.
Sure.
Right? This is crazy. I mean, there's, by the way, let me give you a number that'll surprise you. What's the population up since pre-pandemic? 2019, the population is up 1.8%. From 2019 federal spending to Biden's budget, how much is it up?
Oh, God.
Population up 1.8%. How much do you think?
Since 2019?
55%.
Yeah, I was going to say 45%.
Really? 55%.
Wow.
Like, who in God's green earth is going to pay for this?
I just want to read those numbers because, again, these are not conservative far-right people.
Right.
This is slightly left of center. Goldman Sachs Economics Department and the Brookings policies, tax policy. One last one, Senator. TikTok, can we finally boot them out? I mean, the evidence is overwhelming. It is overwhelming. And by the way, their parent, ByteDance, is very involved in the espionage and military complex of the Chinese Communist Party.
If it's made in China, anything about China, it's bad for you. Mm. Everything about China is bad for you. Don't buy anything from them. Don't put an app on your phone. They want to destroy our way of life, and this is toxic for our kids. It's toxic for our kids.
Yeah, they send bad messages to the kids. What happened, Senator Scott? Is there any legislation in the House and Senate, something that, you know, can go through and force Biden to sign it?
Yeah. Yeah, there's one bill that I'm on with Marco Rubio that would just completely ban it. There's another bill that would give the president the authority to ban it. I think we ought to just ban it. I mean, I think we got to get rid of TikTok. But by the way, every person in this country needs to just stop doing business with China. Just stop. Mm. They're bad. They want to destroy us. So let's all understand. The spy balloon was just an example, but they got drones. They had, when I came in 4 years ago in the Senate, 85% market share of drones that are government bought, so they could surveil us. I mean, they want us out of their way. They want to dominate the world.
You know, we looked at this ByteDance, the parent, TikTok, the social media, so-called. Look, I was on CFIUS, the committee.
Yep.
To make, you know, Foreign Investment Committee. We looked at it and the clock ran out. Trump wanted to sell everything.
Yeah.
But selling ByteDance won't matter. It's selling TikTok. It's ending TikTok because the software involved, this is all very advanced virtualization software, very advanced, way over my pay grade. I just used to try to keep up. You cannot change that. They take pictures. They know where you are.
Right.
They know who you are. They know what military base, you know, you're next to. That's what they're doing here. And then they're sending you, as you mentioned before, these subliminal toxic messages to young people who then go out and do crazy things. It's just TikTok has to be banned, it seems to me. Just banned. No,
it has to be
no
banned.
Exception.
It has to be banned. This week is a good week. That's what we ought to do next week, ban it. The House ought to pass it. We ought to pass it in the Senate, and the president sign it. Get them off our devices.
Yeah, there you go. And my last one, speaking of the House, doing a good job, H.R. 1. This was the Kudlow idea for many, many months. We unveiled it on the show. Kevin McCarthy, so wonderful, he and Steve Scalise. But, turn back on the spigots for oil and gas, H.R. 1 permitting bill. It's a very good bill, Senator Scott. And
absolutely,
we unveiled it on our show. Kevin McCarthy insisted. But we're going to do it again on Tuesday. We're having a big conference, America First Policy Institute. And McCarthy's going to be there. Scalise going to be there. You know, Kathy McMorris Rogers, all the House members that worked on this.
Yep.
We're going to have a big conference. I'll be down there. But this is good. I mean, you all in the Senate need to carry this thing. And I know Biden will veto it, but you need to carry it and just
jam it. Yep.
Turn on the spigots.
Absolutely.
Turn on the spigots. We can go to 15 million barrels a day.
We want to be independent. Don't you want to be independent?
Yes.
Yes, I want to be independent.
Yes.
Our country needs to be independent. We can help our allies, and we can get inflation down if we get more oil and gas produced.
You know, refined petroleum products cover every nook and cranny of the economy.
Everything.
They're involved in it. People have no idea. Hundreds of little products come from petroleum, which the Bidens want to ban. It's incredible.
Right. Absolutely. Right. And it doesn't mean you're against solar. It doesn't mean you're against nuclear. It doesn't mean you're against anything. You're for lower oil and gas prices.
Yeah, that's the name of it, by the way, lower energy costs. Senator Rich Scott of Florida, we appreciate your time, sir, very much. God bless. Folks, I'm Kudlow. We're going to take a break, and we will be back on the other side with John Carney and talking about the Fed and the economy.
Larry Kudlow. It's the Larry Kudlow Show. Free market prosperity starts here. Now, here's Larry Kudlow.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. This is the Larry Kudlow Show. It's a great pleasure to be with you. By the way, you can live stream us on the internet. LarryKudlowShow.com, LarryKudlowShow.com. And you'll hear us all across the country, throughout the world, throughout the solar system and the Milky Way. We're going to bring in my great pal, John Carney, Breitbart news editor, economics and finance, and co-author of the must-read Breitbart Business Digest, also a frequent contributor to the Larry Kudlow Show on Fox Business. John, welcome. Thank you for doing this. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
So I'm reading your piece now. Markets are back to fighting the Feds. Very interesting, because you're right. With all the things going on, inflation, interest rates, the banking issues, market interest rates are falling.
That's right.
Everything's falling except the Fed's target rate, which went up a quarter to 5%. But I was looking, John, I was looking just this morning. I clicked on the Atlanta Fed GDP. Now they've updated it through yesterday, I guess. And they're still at 3.2% for the first quarter. And the economy is mixed, but I'll let you talk about it because the question leads, I think eventually, leads to a trade-off. You got the banking problem on the one hand, you got the inflation problem on the other hand, and you also have the Fed's actions. So what's this going to do? Is he going to raise the inflation target from 2 to 4, or is he going to keep tightening? Or are why are the markets such a disconnect with the Fed?
Yeah, it's pretty extraordinary because remember, we just got the new Fed projections out this week. And yet, and that shows that the Fed officials, you know, and this is after Silicon Valley Bank, you know, after all the problems they're seeing, it shows that Fed officials think that they have at least one more hike and that they're going to hold there till the end of the year. If you look at what the market is implying is going to happen, it's a couple hundred basis points of cuts, that there's no more hikes. Mm. And then starting at the next meeting in June, they start cutting, and they cut basically 25 basis points every meeting after that. So that either is the market saying they think the Fed is going to chicken out, you know, not stay at a 2% target, or that they think the economy is about to fall off a cliff, which is odd because, as you're saying, the first quarter numbers look pretty strong. Mm. We have the GDP Now numbers coming in very strong. We had yesterday Chris Williamson at S&P Global putting out the Purchasing Managers Index, saying that the data for March is consistent with about a 2% growth rate. Mm. So these are pretty good numbers. And nothing, and of course, we have all the labor market indicators, and we've had falling jobless claims benefits week after week. We're still below 200,000. These all say, that there's no reason, absent the financial crisis getting worse, which it doesn't appear to be so far, there's no reason to expect the Fed to start cutting in June. Everything, except then you look at things like the inverted yield curve or the index of leading indicators. Those tell you things are going to get really bad pretty soon. So there's a lot of mixed messages coming out of the economy right now.
Yeah, the money supply is falling. Commodity indexes, very soft, as you say, the leading index of leading indicators. But you have this weird thing. This came up last night on the show with you and Liz Peek, but the two-year note is 377 and the three-month T-bill is 461. And the Fed funds rate is somewhere close to 5. And, of course, the 10-year is 337. So you have a deep inversion, upside-down yield curve, which is saying the Fed should be cutting rates. But the Fed doesn't seem to want to cut rates. Now, let me ask you something. I went back, John, just the Fed's target for inflation, right, is the PCE, the personal consumption expenditures deflator. So here are the numbers. The core PCE for the last 3 months is 4%. For the last 12 months, it's 5.4%. The overall PCE for the 3 months is 5.4, and for the 12 months, 4.6. So call it call the inflation rate 5%, round numbers, okay? The Fed funds rate is at 5, or near, you know, 4.75. John Taylor from the Hoover Institute, famous economist, Stanford University, and others think you should have the funds rate above the inflation rate. Like Taylor says, the funds rate should be 6%. The markets are saying the funds rate's going to 3 or something. I don't get that. I just don't get that.
It's a big disconnect. I think the markets are looking at things like the yield curve inversion and saying, look, that itself has a tightening effect when you get the yield curve that inverted, because banks, it doesn't make sense to lend, right? If they're paying, I mean, look at what happened to the borrowing from the Federal Reserve. That went up a lot last week, right? We saw a tremendous amount of banks coming to the discount window and coming to these new facilities, but they're paying 4.75 for the money they're borrowing from the Fed, right? So what does that mean when they're going to lend it out? It means that they either have to be charging a lot for loans, or they're not going to be making a lot of loans that can't afford to pay, you know, the higher VIG. So that itself has a contractionary effect. So I think people are looking at those and saying, okay, the Fed charging this much is basically going to cut off bank lending in a lot of places if they go any higher. So maybe they have to come down in order to keep, you know, when you have both the financial crisis going on and this problem with the inverted yield curve, maybe they have to come down. Mm. But look, I don't see how they come down with inflation running at 5% and unemployment at, you know, below 4%. That doesn't seem to me like Jay Powell and everybody else is going to decide, yeah, we better come down because things might get bad. I mean, things are going really well.
Well, your other piece on the Breitbart Business Digest, the Fed is forecasting a contraction. Now, that's interesting. You're saying if you look at their numbers, I guess, for the second half of the year, to get a yearly 0.4 growth rate, which is what the Fed new estimates are, you'd have to have a pretty big drop in the economy. Is that what you're saying?
It's just math. If we're growing at 3% right now, and we're almost beginning the second quarter, if we're growing at 2 or 3% in March, we're going to be growing that much in April, and I don't see any sign that we've fallen off a cliff in the last 2 weeks. Mm. So that means we'll have positive growth in both first quarter, second quarter. How do you get all the way down to 0.4? There has to be a big contraction in that third or fourth quarter or both quarters in order to get the full year growth rate down that much. So I think the implicit message here is the Fed is saying, one, that they're going to keep tightening, and two, that they're going to tighten into what will be a second-half contraction.
Well, are they hiding information? I mean, see, that agrees with what the market is saying, but that does not agree with what Jay Powell is saying.
Yeah, they hate to project a recession, right? Imagine how people would freak out if the Fed said, well, we think we're going to get a negative growth rate for the year, and we're growing at 3% right now. That would cause a panic. And also, it creates the impression that the Fed wants negative growth. And they'd like to be able to say, no, we don't want negative growth. We just want, we want to slow things down, but we're not actually trying to cause a contraction. Because part of the problem when you're the Federal Reserve and you're basically trying to run the economy is your projection in some ways becomes the reality. When you tell people we're going to grow 0.2%, it's actually kind of hard to grow faster than that because you're communicating the message. We think that's the growth rate that's appropriate for the economic circumstances right now.
Well, I'm just thinking, John, my friend Kevin Warsh, former Fed governor for about half a dozen years. He was governor during the meltdown. Kevin said on the show that the Fed ought to stop these projections, just stop them. And, in general, I would suggest maybe that Jay Powell and the rest of them, they just talk too damn much. You think they're no smarter than the rest of us? They're no smarter than a sharp derivatives trader at Goldman Sachs? I mean, maybe that'll keep their yap shut.
I think that Jay Powell actually made a mistake when he changed something about the press conference. And this is an extension of, I think, the over-communication. Jay Powell is the first Fed chairman to do the press conference standing up. he looks like the U.S. president, right? Like he's standing at a podium, giving a speech. He shouldn't do that. When they're sitting down, they look like a Fed chairman. Standing up, it looks like the guy who's in charge of the economy. I think you're right that they probably are over-communicating. I would like to see a study by the Fed. What are the effects of the dot plots? Like, are those actually, you know, constructive to have, or have they not been constructive? Because my instinct is maybe they're not very useful, and especially because they're so variable. They change so much. If you look at what they were projecting last year versus this year, they're all over the place. That might actually be undermining confidence in the Fed rather than supporting it.
You know, John, your other earlier point, when he's standing up behind the podium and he looks like the president, John, he thinks he's the president. That's a problem, too. It's just so overrated. It's just incredible. Well, we'll leave it there. But anyway, thank you for helping out the way you do.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
Yeah. No, folks, you got to read. The Breitbart Business Digest. It's terrific stuff. John Carney. We'll talk a couple times this week, John. Take care. Folks, we're going to take a quick break, and on the other side of the break, we're going to talk some politics. Alvin Bragg cannot indict a ham sandwich. We're going to talk to my old pal Roger Stone, who's going to have a few things to say. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
This is the Larry Kudlow Show. Now, back to the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. Great pleasure to bring my old friend on, Roger Stone, political consultant and strategist, longtime senior campaign aide to Nixon, Reagan, and Trump. He's a New York Times bestselling author. His website is www.stonecoldtruth.com. I like his fashion stuff as much as his political stuff. Roger, how are you, buddy?
Larry, delighted to be back with you.
Pleasure to have you on. So I was saying earlier at the top of the show, Alvin Bragg, this left-wing, radical, crazy guy, he can't even indict a ham sandwich, you know? What do you make of this whole story right now? What's the Roger Stone perspective?
Well, I may be one of the few people who can fully understand the injustice, unfairness, and political bias of the prosecution or proposed prosecution of President Donald Trump. I was subjected to the Mueller witch hunt. I underwent a Soviet-style show trial, complete with a biased and hateful judge, a corrupted jury forewoman, a stacked jury. And I learned a year after my unconditional presidential pardon that the judge withheld exculpatory evidence against me because Mueller actually had concluded in his final report that he had found, quote, no factual evidence of Russian collusion, WikiLeaks cooperation, or any other illegal act on my part. I was prosecuted to try to pressure me to testify falsely against the president, which I refused to do. And thanks to the grace of God and my prayers to Jesus Christ and the strength and courage of Donald Trump, I'm here to be on your show today. So I know exactly how the president feels. This is a travesty because there is really no crime here. This would presumably rely on the testimony of Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen testified to Congress that he overheard a conversation between me and candidate Trump in 2016, in which I advised candidate Trump that the WikiLeaks disclosures were coming. There's no telephone record to support that. The secretary who Cohen said came into the room to the office to tell Trump I was on the line has no such memory. And Cohen changed his story twice, saying once this happened before the Democratic convention in 2016. Then he changed his mind, said, no, it happened before the Republican convention. Larry, I can tell you exactly when it happened. Never. It never happened. By the way, I passed three polygraph tests on that narrow point. So this is the guy they would be relying on, who has testified in writing and under oath and had his and told his lawyers and had his lawyers assert that Donald Trump was not a party to any payoffs to anyone, This is the guy that they would base their case on, twisting a
convicted
business records case.
Convicted? No, convicted perjurer, which the very good lawyer, well-regarded lawyer, Robert Costello, ripped him to pieces in front of the grand jury. So
former federal prosecutor, in fact.
Right. The evidence shows, and by the way, there was a letter about this that Cohen wrote. I mean, Cohen keeps changing his story. You're quite right. So Trump had nothing to do with any payoffs or hidden payoffs or campaign related payoffs. In fact, he may not have even had an affair with this Stormy Daniels person. But
she denies it.
Right.
He denies it.
Right.
The only one who claims it is Michael Cohen,
right,
who can't keep his story straight.
Exactly.
But let's go to the larger point here, which is Alvin Bragg is merely an appendage of an increasingly frantic and hysterical Biden regime, which does not want to face Donald Trump at the polls in 2024. He beat them in 2016. We have a muddled result at best in 2020. I think he beat them again. We saw unprecedented irregularities and anomalies in the 2020 results that, at a minimum, don't make any sense. He is gathering strength, as you can see in the polls. He was told by everybody and his brother not to attack Governor DeSantis, not to use his usual pugilistic, combative style. He turns out to be right. Everybody told him that turns out to be wrong. He has surged ahead of DeSantis. It is clear that the persecution by Bragg, and I think what will be next, a knockoff of this in Fulton County, Georgia, is only adding to the president's strength, certainly within the Republican Party and, I think, in the country.
I mean, what happens here? You think I mean, the far, far left, which backs this guy Bragg, George Soros left, of course, they have the Trump derangement syndrome. But at some point, I mean, he is a prosecutor. It is a courtroom. It is a legal proceeding. He just got to admit he has no case. He keeps talking about, remember, after Bob Costello testified, they said, we're going to have one more witness. But they never had one more witness. And I don't know who the hell the one more witness is going to be. This thing could be thrown out next week, Roger.
I'm hopeful that Mr. Bragg will have second thoughts and realize that he has no case. But Larry, let's be candid. You have a Soros prosecutor, a Soros funded prosecutor in Fulton County, Georgia, Fannie Wills. If one will take the time to read the entire transcript of the phone call between President Trump and Secretary of State Raffensperger, by the way, there's at least six other lawyers on the line, people representing Trump and people representing the Secretary of State. It's very clear that Trump does not tell Raffensperger, just go find 11,000 some odd votes. What he says is there's more. That's the difference. But there's more than that, more than 11,000 some odd hundred votes that you have counted illegally. And if you eliminate those, for example, the 5,000 felons, roughly, who voted illegally, you don't need to question the integrity or the accuracy of the machines. He's not asking him to find votes. He's asking him for an honest count. It's yet another framed indictment because they're just desperate not to face Trump at the polls.
Roger Stone, how do you handicap the presidential race? You're right. Trump has the lead in the Republican nomination. Actually, he's been widening his lead. What do you think here? Give me some forecasts.
I think he will be the nominee of the Republican Party. I think he will be at maximum strength at that point. He is still the model remains the same. He's the one Republican who can reach into independents and blue-collar Catholic Democrats in states like Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania. Of course, we need an honest, fair, transparent election. What's less clear to me, even at this point, is whether Joe Biden will be the nominee of the Democrats. He says he's running. Many professional Democrats I know are shaking their heads. There's much unhappiness about not only his uneven performance, but the looming threat of the disclosures that come out of Hunter Biden's laptop of corruption, influence peddling, lobbying without registering, and indeed treason. Have our top officials in the Biden family or in the Biden administration been bribed by China? It certainly appears that way to me.
Roger.
By the way, everything I know about Hunter Biden, I read in the Washington Post. Pardon me, in the New York Post, every bit.
What's the last 45 seconds? What's your quick assessment of Ron DeSantis?
I think his timing is awful. After having the discipline not to take the bait, he betrays Donald Trump at the worst possible time, and the polls reflect that. He's in free fall. Huge mistake.
I don't know much about him on the issues. I know that you're a good supply side or free market guy. Is DeSantis?
Every one of his signature accomplishments, if you look at it carefully, Larry, you will find in the small print that they're not nearly as great as you think they are. So he says, I banned masks in schools. No, you left it to the counties, and 3.7 million school children continued to be masked for 18 months after you said you had already ended the practice, for example.
Wow. Good stuff. Roger, you working on a new book?
I am. I'm writing a book entitled Roger Stone Did Nothing Wrong, the story of my prosecution and the theft of the 2020 election. Be out here shortly, I hope. It is. You would think writing it would be cathartic, but Larry, I must tell you it's not. It's painful, but it'll be worth it.
All right, Roger Stone, my friend. Thanks for coming on. We'll talk soon. Terrific
Thank
stuff.
You, Larry.
Folks, we'll take a quick break. On the other side, pollster John McLaughlin is going to get us up to speed on what these Republican numbers look like. I'm Kudlow. Please stay with us.
There's perspective.
You just got to keep an open mind.
And then there's New York perspective.
Are you as offended as I am?
And contrary to popular opinion.
I can't make deals with just anybody.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. From Wall Street to the White House, this is the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. This is the Larry Kudlow Show. We're going to talk to the great pollster John McLaughlin, CEO of McLaughlin and Associates. John Prince didn't quite make it. Last night.
No.
Gave it their best shot. Gave it their best shot. Anyway,
they give it
I want to talk to you. I want to talk to you. It's very interesting. Throughout this Alvin Bragg, you know, Alvin Bragg's a DA that can indict a ham sandwich. And all this stuff, the Trump derangement syndrome goes on. There's a lot of powerful news organs that are against Trump that in the past have been helpful to him. But his polls are rising. And his lead against DeSantis is widening. And I think, John, your stuff shows his lead against Biden is widening. So talk to us about that, if you would.
Well, the only crime that Donald Trump committed is that he's ahead in the polls. And you and I know each other. Well, first of all, Larry, your advice to him over the years, he's been a pro-growth president.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people want.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a businessman. He's an outsider. And, you know, like in the polls that you're referring to, I tell you, 85% of all voters say they've been negatively impacted by inflation.
Mm-hmm.
42% have said that they've been so negatively impacted by inflation, they can't make ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you listed in the beginning of your show the consumer prices, gasoline, food, et cetera, what they've gone up by, and inflation being this horrible tax, that's what's really affecting people. And they're looking at Joe Biden, who most voters disapprove, 54%, and they're looking at Trump, and they're saying, I would vote for Trump again, 48-43. Among 1,000 likely voters. And if people want to check out this survey, we publish it every month. We have a history of publishing this over the years. That if they want to check it out, they can go to our website, McLaughlinOnline.com. And in 2016, when you and I were advising President Trump to get him elected back then, we were never ahead in the popular vote. We were close, and we could win a battleground state victory. And in 2020, when he was up for re-election, it was the same scenario, a very close race where we could win a battleground state victory. Now he's ahead in the national popular vote because Joe Biden is the worst president the country's ever had. I mean, he's worse than Jimmy Carter. I mean, we're looking at an economic inflation that I listen, you know, I can read polls, but you give the economic advice, this is not going away. And the American people want this stopped. I mean, it's when you look at the polls and you ask them if the country's going forwards or backwards, they're telling us that I've ever seen American polls where 2/3, 65% of the voters say we're going backwards, not forwards, only 35% forwards. And they say the economy's getting worse. That was the poll this week, 67% to 26%. Mm. The economy's getting worse. Mm. So
why is he? Why is his lead widening over Governor DeSantis? DeSantis publishes a book. The book goes to the top of the list. You know, Trump has a lot of bad headlines that he's going to be indicted. But his polls have widened significantly against Ron DeSantis. And I think that surprises me. What's your explanation, and what do your own polls show?
Well, he's been president and he's done a good job. And in light of Biden, I mean, first of all, I mean, they couldn't have picked a worse DA to try to indict Trump.
Right.
And politically, you know, when the coincidence, the years I used to work for Arthur Finkelstein, and we ran campaigns for lots of candidates. And one of the political things you do is when you have trouble, like Biden does, because they got the bank records from China, and they're looking at millions of dollars coming into the Biden family, and they're making, you know, there's news that Biden doesn't want to be the headlines. So what he does is, get me out of the news. We need to create a diversion. Okay, who can we have indict Trump? Mm-hmm. Fulton County DA, the Justice Department? No, let's have Alvin Bragg do it. a radical left-wing Soros prosecutor that Republicans really dislike, that is a national disgrace because he lets criminals go, and then he, you know, but he'll indict people like Jose Alba, who got stabbed and owned a bodega. And so he decides to indict Trump. And in the meantime, conservatives then flock to Trump because this guy's a really bad guy. I mean, he's somebody that if Lee Zeldin had been elected governor, he would have fired the guy.
So Bragg is boosting Trump's numbers, you're saying?
Because last month we had Trump, well, back in January, we had Trump leading a field of 13 candidates in the primary, 43-31. And this month it's 46-23 with 8% for Pence, everybody else less, against. In January, we had Trump leading DeSantis 52-40 in a one-on-one race. This month, it's 61-31 because conservatives are flocking to Trump to defend him.
But DeSantis is trying to run. I mean, I haven't heard much about Governor DeSantis about the economy, John. In fact, I haven't heard anything. But he's certainly trying to run as a cultural conservative. Now, you're saying that's not working.
No, well, most of the voters in the country, the economy is the top issue, particularly inflation.
Right.
And Trump, thankfully you were with President Trump, and when he was president, we had virtually no inflation.
Yeah, we didn't have inflation. We had no inflation. 4 years, basically. Yeah, incredible.
Economic growth.
Yep.
What's growth going to be over the current year? You know that better than I do. They're saying it's going to be like zero, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when Trump was president, You were growing the economy. The tax cuts worked.
So I'm just interested. DeSantis has a best-selling book, and he goes all over. He's on five Fox shows, Fox News shows, you know, and he's out and about, right? He's around the country. But his numbers come down. Now, you think that's a function of the Alvin Bragg business that kind of blocked DeSantis out, or is there something else going on there?
There's something else going on, too. That's blocking out. Also, when Trump announced he was running again in November, he really didn't campaign. And what he's doing now is, you know, he let the holidays go by. But then January, February, he started going out. He started going. People weren't sure he was really running. Mm. And now he's been in, you know, Iowa. He's been in South Carolina, New Hampshire. He's been to East Palestine, Ohio, the site of, you know, when Biden was away giving our tax dollars.
That was a brilliant move. Brilliant move by Trump. Absolutely. Looked like a president.
And when you ask these primary voters, do you think Trump should run again? 61% say yes. And if he runs, would you support or oppose him? It's 74-22. They would support him. But in a field of candidates, he's only in the 40s. And it's because they're looking at the other candidates, and they look at them and they're saying, DeSantis isn't Trump. He's trying to beat Trump without being Trump. Mm. And that doesn't work for these voters, because the majority, when you ask them if they have pride in the United States, or they're worried, or they're angry, the majority of these voters now tell us they're angry. The rest say that they're worried. So what they're so upset at what's going on, they're looking and saying, we need someone who's not just like Trump. Mm. We need.
What about, let me just ask you about some of the guys show up in the poll. Mike Pence is in all these polls. He's around 7 or 8%.
Right.
He's not going up. He's not going down. He's picking up his appearances now. What do you make of the Pence story? What's your take on the Pence story?
Mike Pence, he's a nice guy, but he's going to get the Mr. Congeniality Award in this contest, because he's not taking stands that would be intense enough to convert the primary voters into real votes. And his strength was he was Trump's vice president.
Mm-hmm.
And now he seems to be criticizing and splitting with Trump at a time when most primary voters want Trump again.
Mm.
So it's being counterproductive. He's actually inside the Republican primary. He's actually building a significant level of negatives right now. And that's DeSantis' dilemma.
Mm.
DeSantis' base is Trump's base, but he's not as intense and as strong. So when he gets in against Trump, he's going to build negatives.
What's Nikki Haley's base?
Not really. Yeah, she's part of the universe.
You're breaking up, John. Go to the window.
I'm actually out by the airport in Palm Beach, so everybody's going to Texas. Oh. So
is Nikki Haley, is she close to DeSantis? Now, it's her numbers. I saw some polls where she's in the Republican primary numbers. She's actually in the low teens, which surprised me.
That's only in South Carolina, where she was the governor.
Oh, okay.
And it's not in the national poll. It's not a national primary. She's really got a piece of the South Carolina vote, maybe some of the New Hampshire vote. That's it. So, there's a long time. It's 10 months until the Iowa caucus. So these other candidates are going to have to go out and spend time in the early states. Mm. And, in the meantime, Donald Trump's still the dominant candidate in these days.
What about somebody like Mike Pompeo, who is very highly regarded, as you know? He's a very smart guy, military man, businessman, has a background nobody else has, CIA director, and, of course, Secretary of State, where he did a good job. And, by the way, his book spent 99% of the time praising Donald Trump. Is there a Pompeo niche in this Republican primary?
Not as long as Donald Trump's in it.
Right.
I mean, there is a foreign policy. You could have more of a foreign policy crisis with Ukraine and other things. And he was an exceptional Secretary of State, exceptional CIA director.
Mm-hmm.
But still, right now, the dominant issue is economics. And you really need a pro-growth economic message.
By the way, Pompeo is very good on it. He's a supply-sider. I mean, I talked to him a lot. He doesn't say, that's not his calling card. He doesn't write op-eds about it, but he is a free market supply sider.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably, but as long as Donald Trump's in this and the front runner and the voters want him to beat Joe Biden, it's very hard to, get recognition for that.
Now, let me go to the Democratic side. Mm-hmm. I just saw polls this week. I talked about it on a TV show. The University of Chicago, NORC?
Right.
One sponsored by the AP and one sponsored by the Wall Street Journal. Joe Biden is cratering right now. But how is it possible, John McLaughlin, that with Biden cratering, nobody wants to no Democratic heads pop up above the waterline to challenge him? I mean, he's like the Wizard of Oz. You pull the curtain back and there's, some little guy there with no power, but nobody wants to challenge him. How is this possible?
Well, he's the incumbent president, but at some point, if somebody did, in a field of a dozen or so candidates, or even more candidates, he only gets 23%. And his weakness, what tells you how really weak he is that they changed the rules for the Democrats to nominate delegates.
Mm-hmm.
Their first delegate state is South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
They've totally wiped out the Iowa caucus for Democrats. The New Hampshire primary is a show primary. It's not a real primary.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing that because Biden is so weak. They, you know, South Carolina delivered them the nomination after four losses.
Mm-hmm.
Or so they're rigging the rules again. And the question is, does Biden? See, I don't think Biden's going to make it. I mean, I just think he's so weak and things are so bad. They may dump him, and you know, the Democrats, whether it's Kamala Harris that they don't want. That's the other thing is Kamala Harris's function, I'm sure, is like impeachment insurance, because if anything happens to Biden, they get her as president.
That's right.
And nobody wants her.
Yeah, but you have very ambitious governors like Gavin Newsom, whom I know quite well, but also this chap in Illinois, Pritzker, whom I don't know,
right.
Who's, you know, he's a rich, rich, rich guy, could self-fund. I mean, these are governors. And in those left-wing blue states, I guess they're very popular, but they don't seem to want to run.
Not right now, but you know, it could be a situation like 1968. You're old enough to remember. You were, weren't you a Kennedy Democrat at some point?
I was JFK and RFK.
Well, think about this as RFK, where RFK didn't get in until Eugene McCarthy put the torpedo into LBJ
mm-hmm.
in the New Hampshire primary.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, if somebody gets in, and they're positioning for it, like Gavin Newsom, they're entertaining reparations in California.
I know.
So it can help them in South Carolina and Georgia in the primary.
That's great.
I mean, it's so obvious. It is so obvious. And when
I
you look at...
Where's my reparations? Where's your reparations? Jeez. White males don't get reparations, John. That's the problem.
I don't know. Maybe. That fought for the union. But what about Whitmer? She repealed right to work in Michigan.
Yeah, she's a
so
hero.
She's
Gretchen Whitmer. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, she wants the unions. So.
All right, John, thanks for the rundown. It's great stuff. Fascinating story. Trump's fascinating story. All right, buddy. Take care. I got to take a quick break. Outside of the break, we're going to talk to Chris Edwards of the Cato Institute. I'm Larry Kudlow. Please stay with us.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Larry Kudlow. Back to the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I want to go back to the budget. We were talking about it earlier with Senator Rick Scott. We got Chris Edwards, Director of Tax Policy Studies at the Cato Institute, and the editor of DownsizingGovernment.org. Chris Edwards, you're complaining that federal spending is up 40% since 2019. Did you see the Goldman Sachs story about the so-called IRA bill that's actually $1.2
trillion? I did in the Wall Street Journal editorial today. Thanks for having me, Larry. Yeah, it's pretty shocking that we thought that the all these energy incentives were only going to cost us a couple hundred million, and Goldman Sachs says it's going to be over $1 trillion, all these new Biden energy incentives. Very, very shocking. But you're right, the budget's up 40% since 2019. So, you know, when you were in there under Trump, the budget of $4.4 trillion, today it's $6.2 trillion. And the thing is, you know, yes, everyone understands that the budget went up a bit during COVID, but it should be coming down again now. But it's not. It's gone up 40%, and Biden's got it going up and up and up. And a classic sort of micro example of this is food stamps. In 2019, food stamps were $63 billion.
Mm.
Today, they're double that, $127 billion. And yet, you know, the unemployment rate's only 3.5%. So why have food stamps doubled? And then food stamps, they're projected, you know, to keep going up. So this is all the spending is just, it's remarkable. It's bankrupting us. And, you know, we got to reverse course here.
Chris Edwards, stay with this food stamp thing. Because I think the whole group, you know, constellation of what I would call social welfare spending, right? Food stamps, housing subsidies, what we used to call welfare, Medicaid, certainly. Aren't they all rising substantially in these Biden budgets? And they have not, Chris, as far as I know, restored workfare or work requirements.
That's right. So school lunch, you know, spending is way up. Old-fashioned welfare called AFDC is up. All these new health care tax credits are up. Medicaid's up. You want to know something really stunning about food stamps that I don't think is widely publicized enough? So $127 billion in benefits this year. One quarter of those benefits go to junk food, cola, potato chips, and the like. Huh. The USDA, which runs the program, kept this hidden for many years. And then a group of healthcare journalists pressured them, and they finally released the data. A quarter of food stamp spending is junk food. This is stunning at a time when we've got an obesity epidemic in this country. And I raise that example to show that, you know, people will often say, oh, you want to cut food stamps. It's terrible. It's going to hurt low-income folks. But a lot of these programs have a huge amount of waste in them if you start looking. There's no way in heck, in my view, that taxpayers ought to be funding $20 or $30 billion a year for junk food. So that's the type of savings I think we can make across the federal budget.
I tell you what, Chris, you know, to me, look, like you, I want to, you know, put a spending collar on all this stuff. But I think restoring the Bill Clinton, Newt Gingrich workfare, and not just for welfare, AFDC, but for all these social benefit programs, would just be a home run, not only in terms of economic growth and the health and morale of the nation, but in terms of spending restraint. Because, you know, that would force people, able-bodied people, I'm not talking about people who, you know, are down in their luck and have bad health, but able-bodied people should work. They should not be on these benefit government benefits, right? And if you put them back to work, you'd have less spending and more revenues, even at low tax rates.
That's right. It's a twofer. And I think that is the type of thing that House Republicans, the Freedom Caucus, are pushing now. Yeah. And it is the type of thing that House Republicans ought to demand as part of this debt limit deal down the road. I did a recent piece at Cato where I went back and I looked at the Clinton spending. If you go back to 2000, a year that was the budget was balanced under Clinton and Republican Congress, federal spending 17% of GDP. Today it's up to 24.2%. So it's up almost 50%. The government grabs an almost 50% greater share of the economy than just 20 years ago. If we had just held spending to that 2000 level under Clinton, the budget would be balanced. Our $1.5 trillion deficit today would have been wiped out, and we would have been paying down debt. So, you know, it's not like we haven't done this before. As you point out, we know how to do this. Like in the 90s, you grow the economy, and you have some restraint in spending.
I talked to every House Republican, Chris, and I just had a note from Jason Smith, who's running the ways and means, about this workfare provision. Because I don't know that they, in the first go-around, I don't know that they can actually roll back spending to FY22. I mean, it would be a good thing, but I'm not sure they can. But I do think workfare, and I think Biden's will fight that tooth and nail. They don't want workfare. They want, you know, unlimited government. I mean, isn't that what the Bidens want? Unlimited government. Chris, the Bidens would love the government to take over the banks, just like they'd like the government to take over everything else. I mean, that's what their central planners want. But you put in workfare, you stop all that. And that would be a great
I agree with that. And I also think, you know, I last in, first out in corporate inventories. Why not a last in, first out for these recent jumps in program spending?
Oh,
why can't we at least get spending back to the 2019 level? So that means, you know, cutting stuff like this excessive student aid and college loan, the school lunch, the food stamps, and all the other, you know, spending that we've added just in the past four years. You want to know what's done?
I got to get out. Chris Edwards of Cato does some of the finest work on the budget, folks, you will ever see. Chris Edwards at Cato. I'm Kudlow. I'm just along for the ride. But we're going to take a break. And on the other side of the break, we're going to do some stock market work. Stay with us, please.
It's the Larry Kudlow Show. Free market prosperity starts here. Now, here's Larry Kudlow.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. This is the Larry Kudlow Show. And by the way, during the week, please join us on the Fox Business Network. The name of the show is Kudlow, 4 to 5 p.m. every day. And if you can't make it at 4 for some crazy reason, well, just text your favorite 9-year-old, and she will show you how to DVR the show. Now, let's go to our guests and do some stock market work. Nancy Tengler, CEO and CIO of Laffer Tengler Investments. She's an author, USA Today columnist, and she's just downright really super smart. And Kenny Polcari, my old pal, managing partner at Case Capital and chief market strategist at Slate Stone Wealth. I'm just looking at this. See, the Dow Jones this week. What did I actually, for the week it was up. It's up nicely. So I want to know, I'll start with you, Nancy Tengler. Banking crisis. Is it over? Is it calmer? I can't even talk about Janet Yellen. One day she wants to bail out everybody. The other day she doesn't. Then she comes back and she does. But, I mean, I'm just interested. What is your take on the so-called banking crisis?
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, I think that the market is starting to take things into its own hands. I think that the credibility of not just the Treasury Secretary, but also Chairman Powell in his press conference, I think investors are starting to, you know, I mean, the 2-year is telling you that they're going to have to cut. If the reason is recession, we probably agree with that. But I think for the most part, and I'd love to hear what Kenny has to say about this, I think for the most part, the bank crisis will be muted from here, that the large banks are in great shape. We're going to bail in everybody out anyway, so what the hell does it matter?
Yellen finally said, by the way, on Thursday. She came back to it. She said, this is just so great. Anyway, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's all. I'm optimistic about other things. I'm worried about other things. This one, I think, they've taken all the risk off the table, participation trophies for everyone. And if you're a bank manager, you really don't have to be any good at what you do. You just have to show up for work every day.
I love that. Well, Kenny Polcari, I want to ask you the same thing. Whether banks can do anything they want and the government's going to bail them out, is the crisis over? But also, Nancy mentioned something very important, the 2-year note, 3.77. The Fed funds rate is going to move up to 5. But the 2-year note has fallen so much, and the 10-year note has fallen so much. So the curve is totally inverted. The short end is inverted. The long end is inverted. And I'm not sure I've seen anything quite like this, Ken Polcari. And I don't. What does it mean to you?
So listen, I got a couple of things. I think Nancy's spot on. I think the whole banking thing got really overblown, and they created hysteria in the whole system where there really wasn't any. I don't think specific banks. Yeah, we saw what happened, but that doesn't affect the whole sector. And to Nancy's point, I think the banking system in this country and really the global system is fine, right? Yes. So I think she came out and basically said we're backstopping everyone. She did, and then she didn't, and then she did it again. Mm-hmm. Getting all the confusion. But I think that's at least temporary. I think they'll do that now until we get through this and it counts down. Then I think they'll revisit what those rules are and what the risk should be and all that stuff. But I do think for now they will. And I think the market is beginning to understand that. Look what happened on Friday. We were getting caught Friday morning in the pre-market because the rumor about Deutsche Bank, Europe ended lower, but we started low, we rallied into the bell because I think people are investors and traders are realizing that that the system is fine. Now, to the point about the Treasuries, did you see the news that Jimmy Bullitt from St. Louis told Bloomberg, I think on Friday, that he sees the terminal rate still going to 5.625%, which is up from where we are at 5%. And he was joined by Barkin and Atlanta's Rafi Bostic, all saying inflation remains the story and that the banking crisis will solve itself. But inflation, the Fed should remain focused. So while the bond market is telling us one thing, you're hearing confusing and conflicting data out of, you know, these Fed heads that are all part of the FOMC committee.
Well, that's a really important point. It's a super important point, Nancy. It's like I had this conversation a little bit with John Carney earlier in the show. These Treasury rates plunging are telling a completely different story than Jay Powell or Jim Bullard or a lot of the Fed heads. Completely different. I mean, plunging rates mean what?
Right.
Recession, lower inflation, you're going to slash rates. But what Powell's saying is the economy's still got strength, inflation is still a problem, and we're going to raise rates some more. I mean, basically, he signaled another quarter point. I think you would agree with that. So that's a big disconnect, and investors are kind of caught in this crossfire.
Yeah, no. I mean, Larry, he also said he thought there was still a path to soft landing, which I guess he sort of has to say. But I mean, I gave up listening. You know, I was listening to that segment, and I said the very same thing to you and on your show. I just wish he would stop talking because what he says from meeting to meeting is contradictory. And then there's no look back. Oh, I know I said that. There's no acknowledgement of all the myriad mistakes that this group has made and really led by him, starting with, you know, the 2020 Jackson Hole meeting where they decided to become data dependent. How well did that work out? Mm. And, you know, we're not going to raise. We're not even thinking about it. No, we're not 75 base points off the table. Then we get a 75 base point hike. I mean, I think, listen, I can't speak for the market, but it looks to me like the bond market, which has pretty much led him all the way through this, by the way. Remember that the yields were rising long before he raised rates a year ago. And so I think the market is just the bond vigilantes are in charge and he's along for the ride. I think he kind of signaled that it may be one or maybe none going forward. It's hard to tell because it'll change tomorrow.
You know,
I think he signaled that potentially May they're going to pause. They're not going to do a rate hike, but that doesn't mean come June or July that they won't continue raising. And I think a lot's going to depend on this week's PCE, which is their favorite inflation gauge, and next month, April CPI and PPI.
I just, when I was in that game full time with Bear Stearns a long time ago, I used to think that these market rates led the Fed. And you had Fed chairs, you had Volcker and Greenspan, who I think looked at markets to inform them. And I would add to that, kids, like the CRB commodity index has been flat to down now for a year. The M2 money supply is falling, all right? Not just the growth rate, but actually the level is falling.
Mm-hmm.
The level of deposits are falling. Or to go to the economic numbers, the index of leading indicators is crashing. So it's like, and that seems to be what the bond market is saying, but the Fed is being stubborn. I mean, so what are they going to have? Nancy, they just have to surrender the Fed and just say, like, we were totally wrong or what?
Well, I think so. I think finally, yes. I mean, you know, he gave us the 2018 bear market, too. Let's not forget. And flip-flopped pretty quickly on that one. Mm-hmm. So you're absolutely right. Leading economic indicators have been down 10 months in a row. The manufacturing PMIs have rolled over. Every metric, M2, as you mentioned, is negative. BAA spreads now are widening, and we've seen durable goods come down a couple months in a row. Mm-hmm. So I think what the data are telling us is that the economy is slowing, and it's slowing quickly. And, you know, I know that the Fed GDP now number is still at 3.2%. That may continue into the second quarter, but we have believed all along that we were going to see a slowing economy and a recession. We think this year it doesn't really matter. And so we've positioned our portfolios accordingly, but there's a real credibility problem, not just with the Fed, but across government. And I'll just say this very quickly. Today's Wall Street Journal editorial, we wrote a piece last August called Washington Hopium, where we talked about how fraudulent the CBO estimates were on the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act. But all you have to do is go back to the Student Loan Act or the Student Loan Bill. Department of Education came out at the time and said they were going to earn $6 per $100 lent. 25 years later, they lose an average of almost $9 per $100 lent. Mm. That's a hell of a delta, $114 billion, you know, profit expected to, but the reality is $197 billion in losses. So I don't believe anything any of these folks say, and that's what's made this market very challenging.
You know, that's a good point, though. So the IRA bill could be three times as expensive as they suggested. In round numbers, the estimate's $400 billion, and Goldman saves $1.2 trillion. By the way, Goldman's not the only one. The Penn Wharton model looked at it. I don't remember what they got to, but it was much higher than the CBO. And then you have the student loan bailout, which I think the CBO is estimating $250 billion or something. But actually,
they call it a trillion.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Penn Wharton said $500 billion to a trillion. So, this is part of the craziness. I mean, Kenny, do you still trade commodities? You still do any of that stuff or derivatives?
No, I really don't, right? I mean, I commodities via, gold via through stocks, not the commodities.
Well, gold's had a big rally. What do you make of that gold and silver rally?
Actually, gold is going higher, right? I think gold and treasuries are the ultimate safety play. You saw that last week. They took gold up $50 on Thursday when we had all that continued ongoing angst over Janet Yellen, and that's when they sold. That's when they bought treasuries and yields plummeted, right? And so I think those are the two safety plays. I can continue to think that gold is going to perform well and go higher. I actually look for 2,100 at the end of the year, which we might actually get to pretty soon.
Now, you're saying it's a haven of safety. It's not an inflation indicator.
Well, listen, I think in this case, I think it's much more a safety trade. People, when all that confusion in the market, I think people go to where they feel they're going to get the most safety. And traditionally, gold is one of those asset classes that benefits from the fear factor, right? From the chaotic factor.
You ever buy the gold stuff, Nancy?
Yeah, we actually have a metals and miners strategy. We call it the clean energy infrastructure strategy, and it's hedged. There's the cynic in me, but we do. We own most all of the metals and the miners of those metals. Kenny's right. I mean, we think gold. We think actually copper, silver, lithium, those are where that's really where our emphasis is.
Yeah, you were talking portfolio. Right. You were talking on the TV show about that. And, then comes this editorial and the whole report. Actually, somebody from the Hill staff sent me this. The tax credits are virtually unlimited. All the so-called green energy commodity stuff is probably a terrific play. I mean, investors could put in $1 trillion or more. Well, what the heck? Uncle Sam is funding it.
Exactly. And then supply is limited.
Well, I don't even know what that stuff is. Kenny Polcari, have you ever seen that stuff? You ever seen lithium? I don't know what it looks like. What does it look like?
No, I haven't. But to Nick's point, and I agree. Lithium is going to be one of those places that is going to be a huge beneficiary of what's coming down the pipe, right? While you have a lot of back and forth over energy and electric vehicles, the fact is they are coming. We know they're coming. We're still very much in the infant stages, and I think lithium is a place that's going to see a lot of action.
Ken Polcari, you own an electric car?
I do not own an electric car, and I'll tell you why. Because I know I live in a condo now. I don't have a garage, so I don't have any place to charge. I have to go around the corner to a parking lot and sit there for 2.5 hours to charge. I got no interest.
Nancy, you own an electric car?
I own an F-150, Larry, and I drive it with impunity.
But
Is it the EV version
or the gasoline version?
No, it's gas. Because when I go back and forth to Tahoe, it's a 14-hour drive. So, like Kenny, I'm not going to sit there.
I love that. I would love to see you in a Ford 150. That is so cool. That is so totally cool. I love that. I can just see you.
I have a picture on my phone of her driving the truck. I should send it to you.
I just love that.
The best part is watching me try to get in and out with my 5-inch heels on.
Well, it's like, I know, you got to get, and it's like you're putting your feet in the stirrups of a horse. You just got to pull yourself up. No, but that's a wonderful mother of a truck. It's fast. I have a 5-6-year-old Lincoln Navigator, the long one. I keep it in Connecticut. It's gas powered. It works. Yeah. I don't know. I like it. I'm not buying an EV either. Anyway, we're going to have to take a break. This conversation is wandering. That's what we do here. Nancy Tengler, CEO and CIO of Laffer Tengler Investments, Kenny Polcari from Case Capital, and Slate Stone Wealth, two of the best of the best. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
This is the Larry Kudlow Show on 77 WABC. A station built just for you. Entertaining talk, information, and New York opinions.
You are a ball of fire, there.
The world famous and American original. Talk Radio 77 WABC and WABCRadio.com.
Take it from me, Sid. Water damage can destroy your home. It happened to me. What a nightmare. Meet Wazens, advanced systems for leak detection and water savings. Wazens enables you to monitor water usage from your smartphone. Go to Wazens.net for more info. Wazens detects leaks and saves you water. Get an alert to your mobile and the water can be shut off immediately from anywhere because response time is crucial. Go to Wazens.net. That's W-A-S-E-N-S. ENS.net. Avoid a disaster. I'm Sid Rosenberg, and this is Ocean Drive in Coney Island. Direct access to the beach and boardwalk. 24-7 attended lobby, folks. It's gorgeous. Ocean Drive is now leasing. Call 718-449-7873. OceanDriveNYC.com.
Balance of nature. Changing the world one life at a time.
I've actually been in fitness for a long time. I just thought, well, you know what? I'm a little tired during the day. And that was one of the main things I was having. It's like, oh, man, you know, I'm just give this a shot. And so I started the Balance of Nature, and I didn't really feel a lot for a couple of weeks. And then all of a sudden, I had energy. And so for me, I was like, oh, my gosh, it took that kind of tiredness away. So now I don't feel that. So that is huge. And so I was just like, I cannot take this tiredness, but now it's gone. So yeah, I love the Balance of Nature for that.
Start your journey to better health with Balance of Nature. Call 1-800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com to get 35% off your first preferred order. That's 1-800-246-8751. Go to balanceofnature.com or call 1-800-246-8751 and get this special offer by using discount code WABC.
Hi, this is John Katzmatidis Jr. Make sure to get my dad's new book, How Far Do You Want to Go? Lessons from a Common Sense Billionaire. I'm lucky enough to learn from him every day, and now you can too.
Read my book, and you'll find out how to make your first billion.
Available now at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. To get a signed copy, go to WABCRadioStore.com.
Well, he is Greek-American. He's a New Yorker.
It's a great American success story.
He's involved in a number of businesses.
He's a great role model.
He's got plenty of ideas on how to bring change.
Tomorrow at 8 a.m., it's the Katz Roundtable with John Katzimatidis.
Good morning, America. This is the Katz Roundtable. John Katzimatidis here.
Giving you both sides of the story with New York sensibility. Tomorrow at 8 a.m., it's the Katz Roundtable with John Katzimatidis on Talk Radio 77 WABC. Back to the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow with two experts on the economy and the stock market. Nancy Tengler, CEO and CIO of Laffer Tengler Investments. Kenny Polcari, Case Capital Advisors, and Slate Stone Wealth. Kenny, what are you doing? I mean, I got to give my listeners some sense of what the hell to go on here. What are you doing, buddy?
So listen, after all the chaos we've seen, I am really, really interested in the regionals, right? So Ken, you saw what's happened to a lot of these regional names. They've gotten absolutely slaughtered, a lot of them getting dragged in for no reason other than they're just getting dragged in, right? So Western Alliance, New York Community Bank. I mean, look what happened there. That sold off 35% since March 6th. And then after the news out that they were going to buy the assets of Silicon Valley, they took it right up 40%. Mm. It was a huge opportunity because of an overreaction, I think. Mm-hmm. The same goes for Western Alliance, is another name that I like to look at in that space, just because I think the chaos has created tremendous opportunity.
You want to invest or buy First Republic? You're putting a syndicate together to buy First Republic?
You know, it's funny. First Republic is now the poster child of everything that's wrong, right? So that one I'm just watching. Maybe at some point I would put a group together, but right now I'm just watching.
I could see you living out there. You know, the Silicon Valley Bank, by the way, it was a rogue bank. It was never a real bank. A rogue bank, right? Hillary Clinton investors, climate change, left-wing, Alvin Bragg-type management, and the San Francisco Fed knew all about it, and they didn't do a damn thing. All right? That's my statement. I don't know that First Republic is that bad, but I think they have a lot of bad real estate. In fact, Nancy Tengler, is that an issue? So Ken Pocari is going to scoop up all the regional banks because they're cheap, and he may be right. He may be dead right. He's done this in the past. But I am worried not only the bond portfolio, but just for a moment, the loan portfolio of a lot of these banks. What about commercial real estate? Everybody keeps telling me it's going south. I don't know that, but that's what everybody keeps telling me, especially the two coasts, New York and California. What do you think?
I think it's a real risk. And so you have to geographically pick your spots. But 38% of loans at a median bank are commercial lending loans and real estate loans. And we know that, commercial real estate loans. And we know that, a lot of those properties are underwater. So, it's often the case that you want to take the big bets, as Kenny's arguing, during periods of stress. We've been underweight the banks. We own some. Clearly, our super regional is PNC, and we may add to that, but we're not going to dip in. And I just think there's too many other places that I'd rather be in this environment. And
like
and
what?
So,
like what?
Well, so like the metals. And we just added some holdings. I think I mentioned this on your show, and in American Express and Chubb, and we've added to some. We've taken some gains on our technology holdings, which I've been talking about for 6 months. You have to add it back in. We did. They appreciated, and so we've sold Microsoft and Salesforce, and we're just redeploying very carefully into companies that we think can generate reliable earnings in this coming slowdown in economic growth.
I mean, what about what we used to call economic sensitive sectors and stocks, cyclical stocks, consumer discretionary, industrials, that kind of stuff. What's that stuff been doing, and is it worth anything?
Yeah, I mean, we're overweight. The industrials have been one of the best performers in the market. We're overweight that group. And then we've been adding to consumer discretionary as well. So names like Chipotle, McDonald's in our dividend growth portfolio, Target, Tesla was one of our holdings we picked up in early January. We took a nice run in that. That was luck. That'll never happen again. But we added to it a little bit recently on the pullback. So we like consumer discretionary.
Retail-related, consumer-related, I'm just looking at the stock sheets, have done pretty well. I mean, let me see.
Mm-hmm.
Consumer discretionary year-to-date plus 9.6%. S&P 500 retailers, not quite as good, but I think 3.4%. I'm looking at home builders. S&P 500 home builders up 14.3%. Wow. Kenny Pocari, what do you make of that? I thought housing was in the tank.
That confuses me a little bit about the home builders, although as a group, they got clocked in 2022. So, some of that is also bargain hunting as people try to look through the next 4 or 5 months. But I'm still confused because I think rates are going to continue to go higher, and then mortgage rates are going to stay higher. Although what you're hearing now from all new home builders is suddenly, I heard last week, people are getting, as you know, they're getting freebies, right? So they're getting upgrades in the kitchen. They're getting upgrades in the bathrooms. They're getting upgrades in the flooring. So they're giving away. And Lennar, I think, is one of them that's buying down your rate because they've got their own mortgage company that's buying down the rate to give people a little bit of an edge, right? So they were talking about 4.9% mortgage rates after Lennar buys it down.
The problem is, though, you buy a house because of Joe Biden. Because of Joe Biden, you can't have an air conditioner, a toilet bowl. You can't have a shower head. It's very difficult to buy a home without all these appliances. You can't have a washer and a dryer. Just kidding. You know what I'm talking about. Nancy Tengler and Ken Pocari, great stuff. Neither of them owns an electric vehicle, and neither do I. I'm Kudlow, folks. Money and Politics, next up with Monica Crowley and Steve Moore.
The Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. We're going to talk some money and politics with Monica Crowley, former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, author and columnist, and runs the Monica Crowley podcast. It is the most exclusive podcast in America. And Steve Moore, FreedomWorks, Committee to Unleash Prosperity Hotline, and his great radio show, More Money, WABC, follows this show on most of these very same stations. Well, welcome, kids. Monica Crowley, welcome. I want to ask you a simple question. Isn't it time to just throw TikTok out of this country?
Well, it's great to be back with you, Larry, as always, and with our dear friend Steve Moore. What a treat on a Saturday afternoon. And to answer your question about TikTok, yes, absolutely. We need to dispense with TikTok. It's long past time. You know, the Chinese have been very, very clever over many decades with what they call unrestricted warfare against the United States and the West. Our enemies always tell us who they are, what they believe, and what they intend to do. And back in the 90s, they talked about unrestricted warfare, political, economic, military, cultural. But one of the things that we didn't see coming from the CCP were these kinds of surveillance apps that would be highly addictive, would lock in our young people in droves and addict them to the kind of content that they're putting out. And they have really fashioned TikTok into a Trojan horse. This is a weapon. This is a surveillance tool of the CCP. And for people, especially young people, Larry and Steve, who say, hey, I'm nobody prominent. I don't really care if the Chinese have all of my data. What do I care? Well, you should care, because we are in a soft, cold war with the Chinese that is rapidly accelerating and may very well go kinetic very soon, whether it's over Taiwan or even over the United States homeland. We see spy balloons and everything else. So we know that the Chinese are really ramping up for war with the United States, a hot war. So you should care, and everybody should be taking TikTok off their phone immediately. And I do believe that there is bipartisan support, Larry and Steve, for a nationwide ban on TikTok.
Well, I hope so. I think you're right about the surveillance app. I think that's a key point. I mean, Steve Moore, you know, ByteDance is up to its eyeballs. ByteDance, that owns TikTok, is up to its eyeballs in the Chinese Communist Party's, you know, military system, surveillance system, as Monica suggested. And the other point is, you can't, first of all, they don't want to sell. I mean, the Chinese said this week. So they had their lobbyist go on the Hill and try to sweet talk everybody. I think the guy failed miserably. Actually, they came over to Fox. He came to Fox. I couldn't do it because I had some I had some commitments. But I want to throw them out. And on Monica's point about surveillance, you know, the surveillance, you know, it's not only personal information. It's who you are, where you are. It's geographic information. They love geographic information. This is what Huawei tried to do with our military bases before we threw Huawei out. And, of course, they send the kids really bad messages, all these stories about TikTok app kids who do very bad things and who get hurt and who die. So I mean, there should be a universal effort to get rid of TikTok, Steve Moore.
Well, I very, very seldomly disagree with you and Monica, but I'm very pro-choice when it comes to TikTok. If people want to, I know my wife, she's on that app all the time. And people should be aware of all the problems. And by the way, I completely agree with you about the threats from China. There's no question about it that we are in a cold war and maybe soon a hot war with China. But, you know, this surveillance information, guess what? Google has that. Apple has it. And so if you're worried about people's civil liberties and things, it's not just TikTok. It's all of these technologies that have this kind of application. So do I want to ban TikTok? No, I don't. But I do want people to be aware of you know, the dangers that you're talking about. But let consumers decide.
But remember, just one point, Google and Apple aren't Chinese communist countries.
That is true. That is true. I mean, and, you know, you and I, Larry, have had this conversation.
That's a big issue.
I think the only way that that TikTok will be able to go forward, as, you know, this is a company that has, you know, $100 billion valuation, is if they completely have the Chinese divest and then the ownership of it. But for one reason or another, they don't want to do that. So it's a complicated issue to me, and I will agree that you know a lot more about it than I do, Larry, because you were in some of those CFIUS meetings,
yep,
as I recall.
Yep.
So, you know, So that's my position.
Monica, I mean, I don't know if you've studied it, but I want to tell you, we looked at the Trump administration, which want to get rid of it. We looked at the idea, which was proposed by some people in the private sector. You know, if you could just sell ByteDance, everything would be okay. But everything's not okay because TikTok is wired through software, and Chinese will never let go of that. They will never let go of that. And we had people, companies like Microsoft looking at it, and they couldn't figure out how to do it. Now, maybe some genius could figure out how to disconnect it from China, but I have my doubts, and I don't know why we would take that risk.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And remember, I was at Treasury at the time that CFIUS review was underway. Larry, you were in all of those meetings, Secretary Mnuchin, et cetera.
Yep.
And it is a very complicated issue because the Chinese have really crafted a sophisticated Trojan horse here with TikTok. So these conversations did happen in the latter part of the Trump administration with companies like Microsoft and Oracle as well. Ari Ellison sort of stepped up and said, look, I'll take a close look at this. But the algorithms, the software, it's all so intricately tied. Mm-hmm. Even with American ownership, there's no real guarantee, or at least we couldn't figure out a real guarantee to make sure it was an American company and with a lock on it, so there was no backdoor way for the CCP and the PLA to gain access to all of that data. This is a really, really serious issue. Chinese are extremely clever. And keep in mind, guys, you know, I am a libertarian about this stuff too, Steve, but nobody saw this kind of technology coming, you know, and you wouldn't want to give our premier enemy a real backdoor. In China, TikTok, especially as it's targeted to their youth, is full of rainbows and puppies. The content on the TikTok that they are feeding into our children is really, really destructive. It's addictive and it's destructive. So this is a way for them to really undermine our youth, undermine the next generations. And it's just another huge lever for them to try to take down the United States.
I mean, Steve, it's like, it's not like it's just, you know, playing music. It is a surveillance device. You know, we looked at some of these, Monica talked about the algorithms. There's a word, a technological word called virtualization, which has to do with a lot of this, has to do with G5G. Right. But it also has to do with these surveillance systems, sound systems, where you cannot, in other words, the rapid computerization is so closely connected to the content producer and the part of the system that communicates it that you cannot separate them anymore. You could separate them once upon a time, but you cannot. The speed is so fast, and it is virtual. It's like there's no, you can't even take a breath. And that's why selling maybe Oracle could figure out some way to separate it out effectively in a, you know, the system sense, the algorithm sense. But they couldn't, I don't know. When we looked at it 2 years ago, they couldn't. They were willing to try and they're willing to invest money in it, but they couldn't. I haven't seen anything in the testimony, that suggests that's changed. I mean, when Monica calls TikTok a Trojan horse, I think she's got it. I mean, I think that nails it. It's a Trojan horse.
Yeah, the big question here, you know, is whether this rapid technology, the movement towards artificial intelligence and all of these things are going to be pro-freedom or endangerments to our freedom. And by the way, I don't even want the United States government to have all of this information about me and my whereabouts. And so I guess my point is it's not just TikTok we would have to worry about. I think it's Google and these other kinds. By the way, I'm very pro-technology. Mm-hmm. The only other thing I would say about this is, you know, there's a lot of bad stuff on TikTok. But you know what? There's a lot of bad stuff on Facebook. There's a lot of bad stuff on a lot of these, you know, American companies. And I do agree as a parent of five kids that there is an addictive feature to these games, and I find that really, really troubling. But I still think the parents are the one who should be kind of regulating this, not the government.
Monica, before we take a break, I'll give you the last word.
Yeah, look, we're fighting new kinds of wars in the 21st century, and not all of the aspects of this war with the CCP is direct and military and economic. They've found really clever ways to get into this country and take us down from within. Which, remember, guys, all of this started as a KGB operation in the 1930s to infiltrate the United States and destroy us from within by grabbing control of all of the main pillars of American society and life, including media, academia, the culture, Hollywood, etc. Soviet Union collapsed, and guess who stepped in and took over the project? The CCP. So I think we have to be really, really on point in terms of trying to anticipate what kinds of threats the CCP is coming at us with, because they won't all be obvious like today.
By the way, I'm reading Spy Among Friends by McIntyre, and I'm watching it on TV. It's just absolutely, it's about the Kim Philby story. It's absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. I love spy stories anyway. I don't like technology. I just like old fashioned spy stories. But I still want to get rid of TikTok. Anyway, Monica Crowley and Steve Moore, stay with us. We'll be right back after this quick message.
Larry Kudlow. From Wall Street to the White House, this is the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm here with Monica Crowley, former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, author of the Monica Crowley podcast, and Steve Moore of FreedomWorks and the Committee to Unleash Prosperity and More Money, which follows on most of these stations. Let's just take something else here. Alvin Bragg or not, documents, classified documents or not, J6 special counsel or not, Donald Trump's polls are rising. They're rising a lot. And it's a very interesting story. And Joe Biden's polls are falling. And they're falling a lot. In fact, there was a big story about the Wall Street Journal, University of Chicago poll about pessimism, remarkable pessimism under Biden. So, Steve Moore, what do you make of this? Trump polls are like shooting up. It's all very interesting.
I think people are being reminded of how unfairly Donald Trump has been treated by the media and by the government and his left-wing critics from the day he came down that escalator. He's never really had a fair shake in the media. We talked a little bit about this last week on your show, but, you know, the first 2 years of his presidency was totally dominated by one story in the media, and that was the Russia collusion hoax, mm-hmm. which they never – by the way, have they ever apologized for that? I don't think
never.
So.
Never, and they've all kept their Pulitzer Prizes as well.
Exactly. Yes. You know, I think people who are Trump is obviously a very polarizing figure. There are people like me who love him, and then there are my family members who hate him. But I think Americans are fair-minded people for the most part, and they see how absurd and outrageous this is. And these hate Trump people, they can't stop themselves. He's been out of office for 2 years, and all they think about is Donald Trump.
Mm. That's right. That's about right. That's about right. And every word he says and everything he sends out. But, Monica, I think there's – I'm reading this poll about the incredible pessimism in America. Most of that is centered around the economy and inflation, worries about the future. Not all of it. I mean, some of it was – cultural, they don't want to send their kids to colleges anymore. But I think it has something to do with inflation and the economy, Monica, and maybe other things. Trump, you know, he did it once. Maybe he can do it a second time.
Actually, Donald Trump brought back the U.S. economy twice before so he could do it a third time. Mm. Remember, he brought it back when he first came into the presidency, and then he brought it back after the unprecedented wholesale shutdown of the U.S. economy after COVID. Remember, when he turned over this U.S. economy to Joe Biden, it was about, 6% growth? So we were booming back, and inflation was at 1.4%. So he handed him a very strong, growing rebound. And, of course, Biden and the Democrats torpedoed it on purpose. The other point, too, about a thriving economy is, you know, prior to Donald Trump, we had to reach back in memory to the Reagan years for a really strong, booming economy, right? Well, now people only have to reach back two and a half years to remember what it was like under President Trump with all of the pro-growth economic policies from tax cuts, regulatory relief, fair trade deals, unleashing our great energy sector, all the great stuff that the two of you worked on as economic advisors, and then what we worked on at Treasury. People don't have to go back that far with their lived experience just, you know, two and a half years ago. So I think that contrast is really stark in most people's minds. And now they can't afford a dozen eggs. You want to pay $25 to make yourself an omelet at home? It's absolutely insane. Gas prices, home heating, fuel, energy, all of it across the board that directly affect the American people every single day, their cost of living, their quality of life. And then you add that to crime and cities and collapse and the wide open border, and people have had enough.
Let me get Steve Moore. One part of this polling story, though, is that Trump seems to be pulling away from the rest of the Republican field, including Governor DeSantis. I don't have anything against Governor DeSantis. I'm just saying DeSantis has a book tour, goes around the country, does a lot of Fox News interviews, and his numbers went down. Trump's numbers went up. And I find that surprising.
Yeah, look, I'm not picking a winner this time. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm going to be pretty neutral on this, although I do have a great, great personal affection for Donald Trump. It is interesting. And, you know, look, DeSantis had a huge, huge victory this week, gigantic victory. They got universal school choice done in 3 weeks in Florida, which is an issue, you know, we've been working on as a movement for 40 years. And so he has a great, great list of accomplishments. I think he made a big mistake, Larry, in attacking Trump this week. You know, I just I think, you know, it was stupid. Don't get in the sewer, you know, with Trump. And so I think that but look, I want to see them all on the stage, just like we did in 2016. And let's see how they perform. You know, let's see. You know, we've got a lot of great Republican governors. We've got a lot of, you know, so I just want to see this thing played out. But I'll tell you, there is a massive, you know, the Koch network and other groups that I won't mention. They're completely infatuated and obsessed with stopping Trump.
Right.
And the more they kind of gang up on him, the more real middle-class Americans say, we're not going to have these millionaires and billionaires tell us who our candidate is. So it's going to be really an interesting thing to see. And look, I do worry as a Republican that whether Trump could win, given, you know, there are so many independents who've turned against him. But let's see it play out.
But we all want, and this is the last thought for here.
Yeah.
We want to see them, all right, on stage, as you say. What is their economic platform?
Right.
Because, you know, you read this Wall Street Journal story with the University of Chicago poll about over incredible pessimism. Most of it, two-thirds of it, 65%, I think they said 67%, is about inflation in the economy. So, Monica, I want to see, a fair fight. What is the economic platform of all these candidates, Donald Trump, and Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley, whoever's in the race? And I think that's going to be very, very important for Republican voters and for independent voters and for all voters.
It's going to be critical. And look, you do have successful governors like Ron DeSantis who have presided over thriving states. But here again, Donald Trump has a huge advantage because 4 years of president delivered a booming economy. And he did it through, like we said, those pro-growth economic policies that people really benefited from across the board. This was a very inclusive boom. It was a blue-collar boom. It raised all ships. African-Americans, Latinos, women, Americans with disabilities, historically low unemployment rates. So all Donald Trump really has to do on the economy is basically stand there, point to his record.
No. He's got it.
Catastrophic record.
No, I don't agree.
I'm going to do it again.
He should. By the way, he should have been pointing to his great achievements the last 2 years. But he's going to have to give a future agenda, Steve Moore. He's going to have to, you know, on spending, on trade, on taxes, there are issues. You know there are issues. He's very much of a protectionist, and he does not have a good record on federal spending. He has a fabulous record on cutting taxes and cutting regulations. Maybe not so much on the dollar, but you see where I'm going. And I have not, and also I've not heard Ron, Governor DeSantis, on economic agenda. I'm waiting to hear. I just don't know. And I think, you know, I agree with Monica on the achievements part, but I think the country wants to look forward, right? Forward. What are you going to do? No one knows for sure. This is a Kellyanne Conway issue. She sees it in her polling, for example. I think it's part of this Wall Street Journal thing. The future looks pessimistic now. You got to change that in order to win, Steve.
Yeah, I think you put it very well the other day on your show that Americans are just unhappy.
Right. That's right. That's right. What's going on. That's right. They're unhappy campers.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're not stupid. They see the path that we're on, you know. So when Biden is going out on this big victory tour this week on the economy, I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I mean, when you've got one out of three Americans who think the country's headed in the right direction, you're going to go out and have a mission accomplished. That's absurd. I do worry a little bit, Larry. Again, I love Trump, but I didn't like his message on trade.
Right.
Came out with it was very protectionist,
right?
And I know my friend, our mutual friend Art Laffer, was not happy about that either. So, can you please steer him back?
Well,
there's
a difference between China trade and rest of the world trade.
That's
and
true.
It's rest of the world trade that I do worry about.
Yeah,
Monica, no, you know, Mnuchin and I, we were always worried about global trade deals, right? And China's one thing, but the rest of the world, I don't want a wall of protectionism, at least.
Yeah, but remember the President Trump went in and negotiated better trade deals with Japan, with South Korea, and he was working on one with Great Britain as well. So, look, I don't think you're going to get Trump off of that because it's so intrinsic to his America First platform,
right?
Protecting the American people, the American worker, and manufacturing and bringing it back here.
Cut taxes and good things will happen. Monica Crowley, thank you very much. Steve Moore, thanks, folks. Steve Moore's Moore's Money on up next on a lot of these stations, and I'm Kudlow. Back next weekend.
From Wall Street to the White House, this is the Larry Kudlow Show.